This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Wise Men Say podcast. It's on the back of another delightful 1-1 draw in League One. A familiar scoreline is myself and Gareth Parker and Richard Easterbrook, who also joined us. Say hello quickly, Richard.
Hello quickly, Richard.
Yes, as we discussed on the reaction pod, so we're back again to have the same conversation as we had on Saturday. No Stephen tonight, so it's just us two, and also the delightful, most positive man in Britain, it's James Ray.
Hello. Still just about the most positive man in Britain, possibly. I don't know.
The former.
The former most positive man.
The artist formerly known as the most positive man in Britain.
Yeah.
I can't break that down on the spot. I'm not going to even try into an acronym. Maybe we could break that down in an acronym and then use it as a pod title. Maybe I'll do that later.
Yeah.
So as I say, Sunderland, I wouldn't say Labour do a 1-1 draw because it was kind of a reverse Labour, really, because we laboured in the first half and then kind of, after taking the lead, and then kind of accelerated in the second half, but were thwarted by maybe some bad decision-making, a bit of bad fortune in the second half, maybe. But ultimately, another draw. Drop points, 2 wins from 7 in the league. How are you going to lift us, James? Come on. Make us feel good again.
Well, I mean, it's like you guys sort of said on Saturday, it was very reminiscent of the 18-19 season in performance and just sort of the general feeling, I think, among a lot of the fan base at the minute. But in terms of positives, I mean, there are obviously a couple. I mean, first of all, Diaku's goal was good. It was a good move. Good from him, showed some composure to finish it well, especially early on in the game, because a lot of people had sort of, and me included, sort of commented that he doesn't really start games well when he has started for us. But I think obviously he did start, at least in an attacking sense, quite well on Saturday with the goal sort of epitomising that. Obviously, he does have his defensive issues, but he's not a defensive player. He is definitely not comfortable playing in that position. He's not played a lot of first-team football anywhere. He's obviously playing in a new country, in a new league, and I think it's quite a lot to expect him to suddenly turn into a competent League One left wing-back, having really never played there. And like I said, with the caveats of moving over and stuff. And he does have ability, though. I think he is obviously inconsistent, but the goal definitely displayed the good side of his game. You know, the quick movement of the ball, calm finish. And he seems to really enjoy playing for us. His celebration sort of was full of enthusiasm. He does play with enthusiasm. He just doesn't always do the right things at the right time. And throughout the first half, he was trying to get stuck in. It's just he positionally and sort of just generally speaking, he's obviously not that comfortable, but at least he's trying. I know the comment's been made before that, you know, his attitude is better than other players maybe who we've had in the past to come in similar circumstances. At least he is trying to get better and he is still plugging away. I think other positives, obviously, the onslaught we put on Oxford in the second half. I think really, like you said, it was kind of like a game of two halves, but the other way around, the way it usually is. We created some good chances. Hit the woodwork. On another day, we'd have probably won 3-1. quite easily, I think, even with the caveats of obviously, well, you know, we obviously didn't score, so the finishing wasn't up to par. I think we were quite unlucky that one of those chances didn't go in, because there wasn't a lot Stewart could have done more, really, I don't think, when he hit the bar. I think it was pretty unfortunate. I thought Broadhead had a good game as well. Winchester looked good in midfield, actually. I think that'll be another positive we could maybe look at. I think he's definitely staking the claim to be moved back there on a permanent basis when he doesn't have to be. Semi-positive roundup.
Yeah,
I feel really positive now. That's cheers, you know, cheers. We didn't even talk about the goal during the reaction part. Like, well, just kind of glossed over it.
So. Let's talk about it now. I mean, I know what you're saying on Diakite, and to be fair, I think you can sort of give him a little bit, add some caveats in there for him. I think it's a big ask. I think, like, you know, just because he's signed from Bayern Munich doesn't mean he's going to be automatically good. Like, and I think there was this whole thing where it was like, oh, he's covering there. You know, it's a completely different experience for him, and ultimately, he should be judged the same as anyone else. But I think, like Jim said there, Richard, at least he wants to get better. He does try. And I know that should be like the bare minimum anyway, but I think, you know, he's been asked to do something there, you know, play like left wing back.
Yeah.
That's going to be difficult, particularly for him, but he's going to do the job.
Yeah. And you can kind of see that he is developing. And what you have there is a very raw player, but it's a very promising player. You know, one that has all the tools, given the right coaching, and kind of if he follows the right path, he could be a success. It's not as if they're like, it's not as if he's like a complete, like not a guaranteed to ever make it. There's definitely a player in there. So I'm willing to kind of to see how it goes with him. And also it's League One. It's a great development league. It's much more of a development league than the Championship is. So we kind of afford to kind of blood those kind of players through and see how they develop for us.
I think he very much like he'd be a bit of a match of the day player or a quest player, I guess it would be. Because like if you're a fan of an opposition club, you're looking at, you maybe if you're watching, might notice like some of the goals he scored are quite eye catching. You might be like, oh, he must be good. And then when you see him for the entirety of a game, however long he lasts in it, you can see the flaws in there as well. So
I think as well, just quickly on him also, I think the timing of that goal, because previously, like we'd sort of, I think it was Mickey, you'd sort of quite rightly said that the goals he'd got so far have been like, you know, the fourth goal and a 5-0 and the third goal. Whereas on Saturday, that was the opening goal in a big home game in the first 10 minutes. So like the direct opposite of those previous other types of goals. So I think that as well shows that he hopefully is going to be more than just like the player to put the cherry on top of the cake. And I think if you look at, I mean, that is three league goals as well. I mean, it's not obviously a great deal, but there's not many have scored more than him in our squad, apart from Ross Stewart. He's not, he probably played less minutes than a lot of the other players who haven't scored as many goals as him. So he's not all bad. I mean, obviously, like you say, he's very raw, but I think he does show promising signs. I think just obviously defensively is the main issue, but I don't know playing how much defending wingers for Bayern Munich 2 have to do. Probably not that much compared to what wing-backs in League 1, especially for clubs trying to get promoted, have to do in terms of, you know, the application and stuff. So it is going to be a learning curve for him, but he seems game for it. And, you know, I think although he came with a lot of pressure maybe from fans thinking he's going to be great, I mean, obviously there was obviously the caveat, if he was that good, he probably wouldn't be signing for a League One team from Bayern Munich. It's not, he obviously never was the finished article, but some things I don't like that I see, but I like more that I do see, if you know what I mean, in terms of what he could do. If you look at others, other players with bigger reputations and more experience have not done as well in terms of a goal return, for example, for Sunderland in this division than he has already. So I think we've got to give him some time there.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I know the lads mentioned, you know, he is out of form on the Thursday pod. But, you know, considering the circumstances, you know, he did battle on there. You know, the players who I think deserve a mention, I know we mentioned him on the reaction, but definitely Pritchard. You know, I thought last few weeks he's looked like the kind of player we'd hope we're getting. And he was, I thought he was really influential on Saturday in many aspects.
Yeah, absolutely. Johnson's kind of said that he could be the man that unlocks the doors. Whether that means he's got a career as like a caretaker ahead of him, or whether he's actually going to be like
groundskeeper really... Willie.
I think you know, Saturday showed that he's got that to his game, and it's good to see. You know, we've hung our hat on the likes of Aidan McGeady, and it's good that we've got another player that can do that, a similar kind of job. You know, the goal that he scored, the goal he scored in midweek the other week with the curling shot into the top corner, that was very McGeady-esque. So it's good to have another player that has that in his locker, but can also
remind
kind of,
me that he moves a bit like him as well, like the way he shifts the ball out of his feet. Yeah. I think he played really well. I think it's with him, he's never been fit. I know that's obviously part of the reason again why we've probably been able to sign him is possibly his fitness issues, but I think he does look like he's getting fitter and fitter each week. Yeah, by far his best game for us on Saturday. He had shown flashes of this previously, but I think he knitted together a performance there that was better than any other player on the pitch. I think it would be quite safe to say in terms of, you know, the impact he had for us. He certainly was a constant threat. He got through a lot of work defensively. He got the assist for Diaku, and he was consistently trying to create chances all the way through. And if he keeps playing like that, he's going to get goals at this level, because you can see why more and more he has played at the high level. And I know the price tag he'd had previously was a bit of a stick that was used to beat him with, but I think you can see why, if not maybe worth a lot of money, now he definitely is looking like a player who can have an impact in the third tier. And I think if we can keep him fit, he's going to be really important for us moving forward.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? Keeping him fit, kind of wrapping him in cotton wool after each game and getting him out like a fine crystal glass.
I think it's interesting as well, because I thought Embleton was really good when he came on. Maybe the final ball lacking slightly, but he was really positive and when he got the ball. It's a funny one, because they're kind of vying for the same position, really, aren't they? So in the back, if you play in that back three or whatever with the wing backs, how do you accommodate them both? Do you know what I mean? If you want to play them both together, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Hopefully it'll be a bit of competition between them. Maybe both push each other on. And I think Embleton can play flexibly. I know he did have a bit of a poor game out wide for us not long ago. I can't remember who it was against, but I think in a push we could have them both in. But I think what you'd want more than anything else is for it to be a case of whoever's in the best form plays, and they're both good players. I mean, Embleton's got his own strengths as well, his two-footedness, his ability to hit a goal from range. And I think he just needs to work on his consistency a bit. I think he started the season well, but he's kind of dropped off since he had the sending off. And I think he was injured for a couple of games as well, wasn't he? So I think he needs runs of games. He's looked more recently like he did kind of when we sent him on loan to Blackpool, i.e. a bit flattering to deceive. Whereas I think he hit the ground running at the start of the season, obviously with confidence from being away last season. And I think if he gets a run of games in the side as well, he could be another one who can do it. And like you say, the issue is fitting them both in. But I guess the manager's job, isn't it? I think it's doable. I think if players are in form, they're both good footballers. They don't have to just play number 10. I think we can be creative with how we use them, as long as they buy into it. I think that's the key.
Yeah, I think one thing to remember with that, well, one thing notes with that is that you could play, you know, you could have Pritchard and Embleton as part of a midfield three, but then you'd have to consider dropping one of Winchester and Neil. Maybe there's an argument for taking Neil out the firing line for a bit, because he's noticeably off the boil.
He's quieter, isn't he? He's not playing. He's actually playing badly, but he's not doing anything stand out good. Like, he was doing at least one or two sort of really really quality things each game.
Yeah.
Sort of earlier in the season and recently, it's been more like he's just sort of been just another midfielder. And I think we do notice, because a lot of what's good that we did earlier in the season came through him. Absolutely. He created a lot of chances, didn't he? And there was assists, but there was also starting moves earlier on in the pitch, not necessarily playing the ball for the assist, but getting the ball out wide for it to come back in, that sort of thing. And I think possibly you're right, he does need a bit of a break. He's only a young lad. This is, I mean, he'd not played a first team game for us in the league till this season. So
yeah,
it is a big case of being in the deep end, isn't it? Sorry, Gary.
It's all right. No, I was just saying, I mean, he ain't going to get a break at the moment. So,
well, no, of course. Regardless. Not at the moment, no. But so you just ideally
gotta,
in the future.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got to manage it best they can, given the situation at the moment. I mean, to quickly talk about the goal conceded at the weekend and a sort of wider point in that, it feels as though recently, you know, we do seem to be shooting ourselves in the foot. That's sort of twice in a week. Yeah, very different teams, different competitions, but where a player's been robbed of the ball and they've scored from it. You think back to the goal, the Mansfield goal that we conceded, we lose that game 1-0, and that's Burge kicking the ball straight to one of their players. You know, you look at the fine margins, we're definitely not attacking as fluently as we did earlier in the season. Yeah. And that means that you've really got to make sure if you do get ahead in the game or it's 0-0, you don't throw the game away. And
it's like enforced errors, isn't it? It's like we're literally, even if you just watch the clip of the replay of the goal, there's like two or three points during that where you're thinking, Gooch, what are you doing? It's like it's totally unnecessary. And I know obviously it's not just him, like Bailey Wright's at fault as well, but I think, you know, it's when you combine it, like you say, with other similar instances we've had, I think there's almost a bit of, it's not necessarily complacency, but I do think there is Gooch is clearly not really thinking about what he's doing there in the way he should be.
I think they're probably thinking we're supposed to play this way. This is the way we play. And then it's almost like that, you know, this whole philosophy thing that gets drilled into them or whatever. And now they're in a situation where it's almost like you got to it's like a system override to lump it sort of thing.
Well, that's
thing.
It. I mean, there's teams in the top of the game, you know, in the Premier League, who have systems that they play that are based around possession. But when they're in positions like that, they still get rid of it. You can't tell me if, you know, a possession-based team in the Premier League, their defenders wouldn't just get rid of that, because they definitely would. And that's what Gooch should have done. And you're right. I think it's just a case of there needs to be a balance in the way that we play. And I think obviously Gooch has been out of the team quite a bit as well. So possibly he's not maybe in the full swing of it. Yeah, either. I don't want to make too many excuses for him, because it was a shocking mistake that really is pretty much inexcusable. But at the same time, moving forwards, hopefully Johnson is spending the time he's got with them at the minute to really try and drill in, like you said, the lack of mistakes we need to make, because we're not scoring 3 or 4 every week anymore. So we have to make the goals count that we do.
Score. Yeah. looking at the forward areas, it's interesting one with Stewart and Broadhead. I'm kind of touching on this one on the reaction as well. Stewart's obviously due a goal, but it does feel as though in recent weeks he's kind of coming out of dangerous areas. And I don't know if that's because Broadhead's in the team as well. I'm not saying that they don't work as a pair, but at the same time, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's always that, you know, desire. It's like, well, the more forward you put on, the more goals you score. And I feel as though almost we did look when we went to the one up front in the second half and Broadhead went wide, we looked a lot more effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Stewart does play the lone striker role really well. Like, I think he probably suits his game, because it allows him to combine his physical presence with his speed, but then also he can then arrive in the box. I mean, the amount of goals he scored, where he's one against Rotherham, the one he scored against Wickham, the two of them against Crewe as well, where it's like he was just arriving in the right position at the right time, or he was able to carry the ball from deeper. And I think when he is playing in a two, it does limit him to do that a bit, because obviously Broadhead's going to be in some of his space. Yeah. I think, to be fair as well, like you say, in the second half, Stewart really, like when he hit the woodwork, that was a classic sort of Ross Stewart moment. You know, he scored goals that have looked like that before, and you know that was more like, and that was when he was playing as a lone striker. So yeah, I think you could be right, but at the same time, there has been moments where they've combined well together, especially against sort of, you know, I guess if you like the poorer teams, like that game against Cheltenham, where they, you know, them playing together was really, really a threat they couldn't handle. I think it's a case we have to tailor it to the opposition we're playing, because against some teams, will want the two strikers, but I think Stewart can do offer a unique type of threat when he plays up front on his own, because of he is such an unusual player in the combination of physicality and speed that not many players have.
I think he's a really good, like you say, lone centre forward, and I feel as though I'd rather, like Broadhead, although he's looked decent, this isn't a criticism of him, I'm just not sure is he's probably a lone centre forward. I don't think he's one who plays off. I don't think he's a wide player particularly. I think we've got to get him in the team, and I'd probably play him in one of the wide areas at the moment, especially considering the injuries, etc. we've got.
Yeah, that's the kind of point I kind of stumbled upon on Saturday, was that they're not a partnership as such, the two lone strikers playing in the same team. And that obviously brings few problems, but it brings opportunities as well.
But you can't, and also they've played football in an era that is, it's one up front.
Absolutely.
They haven't played in a two up front era. You know, you get 3-4-3s now, so you've got but even then you've got a central striker. But generally the two up top is
it's not a common thing.
So even if you're playing a three at the back, oftentimes you'll have the two midfielders behind the forward, either narrow or wide. So can't blame them for it not magically working, because it just isn't something that people do anymore. I mean, there's probably in the top sort of two or three divisions, certainly in the top two divisions, you can probably count on one hand the amount of teams who play two.
Can't think of really any at all. Burnley,
probably Burnley in the Premier League. And that's about it, really.
Yeah.
I know Leicester did when they won the league, when they played that diamond midfield.
Yeah.
But again, that's a unique situation. Again, it just all came together. And it was the right mix, but these are lads who, all through their professional careers, have played in a sort of a one up front system.
I think given Broadhead being the younger of the two, and also having played out wide, in his career, I know he's on loan as a winger, he's probably the one you would move out wide.
Oh, Stewart's definitely the more established. No chance.
I mean, and he's the established sort of main man, if you like. He's the big gun, isn't he? He's the one. Yeah. And he's earned the right to be that as well, because he's in double figures for goals this season.
He's still scoring one, and he's still going one and two. I mean, if he finished the season scoring one and two, you'd say brilliant, well done,
fantastic. Absolutely. Especially for his first full season, and I know it's League One, but he's only played for Ross County and various other sort of rubbish Scottish teams before, so it will be a step up for him, and he's handled it really well.
Yeah.
Ross County fan club are going to be absolutely furious now.
Yeah, sorry, Ross. sorry to that one stag. Who's the Ross County fan?
I mean, we'll move on to the game tomorrow night, Tuesday night now, briefly. And then in the second part of the show, we'll talk about the other thing. So in terms of options, it'll be interesting to see if he just attempts to freshen it up. I can't see him starting Diaku again. Personally, I've got a feeling in terms of options, who's he got really first team options who he could bring in? Well, Embleton and O'Brien are probably the only two, aren't they, really?
Yeah, the thing for me is, I know Morecambe on paper aren't a great team, but they've got Cole Stockton, their striker, the top scorer in the league. He's got an incredible run of form. I think we're going to have to be more than slightly wary of him. I think I've watched some clips of some of the goals he scored this season, and he does look really good. I know he's their one player.
Could he be their Diaku? I'm not saying.
Well, yeah,
he scored 12 goals or something.
He's scored more than anybody else, hasn't he? That's the thing. He's top of the goal scoring league. He scored as well as that halfway line ridiculous goal. He does.
He's scored twice, hasn't he?
We're gonna have to. We can't be, being sloppy in possession at the back here, because he's going to be in the form of his life at the minute. So we're going to have to really focus at the back. I think that's going to be the key. I think if we can focus at the back, going forward we'll be fine, because they do concede a lot of goals more. Yeah. I think we're going to... So, yeah, I think you're right. We're possibly Diaku to come out just to rest him, but we certainly have him on the bench as an impact if and when we need him. I think Pritchard, if fit to do so, definitely deserves to start again. I'd go Stewart up top on his own as well.
Yeah. I think I think if you the team that kind of finished the game at the weekend, with the exception of Bailey Wright not being at right back, because that's just an absolute big huge no for me.
No, definitely. Out of the three centre backs, he's the one you wouldn't put there. Flanagan, like I think was mentioned in the chat earlier, was signed as a fullback, so maybe give him a go there. If not Flanagan, then just not right, because he's the slowest and just generally the least fullback like player. I mean, I think Hoffman probably looks more like a fullback than Bailey Wright does. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just not an avenue I want to go down really ever again.
I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? And how we're going to do that, because we are so, you know, in bother with injuries. And I think, as we've seen over the course of the games, in the trophy, we're clearly, there's no one really ready to step up in that position either. So I know some people like, well, I mean, to be honest, I'd you could put Starjacku wide and bring Embleton into the middle. Mm-hmm. As an option, and then have Winchester at right back, which I think against Morgan, I'd be happy to do that.
I think we need to focus on the centre backs most. I think just because of the threat they have from their one striker, possibly Younger to come in and Flanagan to move wide. I mean, Younger's looked okay, but it's a bit.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't need to change the back line, would you? Because you know, it would just be Wright and Doyle.
Gooch would be
at left back, wouldn't he? I think Gooch.
I didn't mind Gooch at left back.
Well, I mean, he'd had a bit of a stinker, didn't he? At times, Gooch.
I mean, he's got a good attitude, doesn't he? So I think he will come back. He'll be looking to put it right, I think, won't he?
I mean, I thought he was really good against Cambridge, but quite poor at the weekend, but I think that's Lyndon Gooch story, isn't it? It's like,
I think when he moved to left back, I thought it was fine.
He was. I mean, the second half, the team we had for the majority,
we looked more comfortable in the second half.
Yeah, so
I think that was also familiarity with the system as well to an extent, because like we went back to having Stewart up there on his own, Gooch.
Yeah,
because obviously, like, I guess because he's not a specialist fullback anyway, to him before it doesn't matter too much whether it's left or right that he does.
Yeah.
And like you say, his attributes do suit sort of the left back role in the way that he can get forward, but he also does diligently work hard. So yeah, stick him there again for me.
I don't mind switching to something like less like a 4-2-3-1 and more like a 4-1-4-1. So moving Winchester out wide and maybe having Embleton, Pritchard in the two central, and maybe Neil sitting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be what I'd be looking to do as well. And I just think that would give us the best balance with the group we've got at the moment.
Because we will pose them a huge threat going forward. I mean, Stewart, Pritchard, whoever does play out of, I mean, presumably Broadhead will play again, even if it is out wide. We've definitely got the tools to hurt them. I think in the midfield, we need to make sure we win the midfield battle, we'll move the ball forwards and then just be diligently defensive against Cole Stockton, because if we do that, we'll nullify that. He is their one threat. So if we nullify him, they don't really, it's not like they've got other players. He scores most of their goals. And when he doesn't score, I was looking at their results before, they don't win. Yeah. So, or even normally score.
I mean, the thing is, or like, you know, say we're arrogant or whatever, but there's no way on earth that we should be losing on dropping points to Morgan at home if you want to get promoted automatically. You can only drop so many points. We need the next two games to get back over that 2 points per game.
I'd like to see a score if you. I'd like it.
Yeah.
It might sound arrogant to say, but I would like us to get three or more.
We've got to, the long term goal in this season is to finish in that top two. So after 46 games, we want to be in the top two. So Morecambe at home should be an opportunity that you say, right, we win this game, win it comfortably, get your goal difference back towards where it should be. I mean,
like the Cheltenham game, I think it's probably similar in some regards to that game, in terms of they're probably similar standard to Cheltenham. I mean, look at the league table. Weirdly, Cheltenham are actually like mid-table.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, this is it, isn't it?
Quite far, but welcome in the league, which surprised me when I noticed that. But
I mean, if there's any Morton fans,
I don't know what that says about the league. To be honest, given how bad they were, we played them.
If there's any Morton fans checking in and thinking, "Oh, arrogant or whatever," it's not that. It's just like the goals of the two sides are very different. You know, Morton be looking to stay up, and we're looking to get promoted.
And the one thing we can't do is be complacent. Like they do pose a threat. We just have to nullify it and do we should do in this situation.
Absolutely.
Which is beat them, because we, you know, it's the goal. We can't.
Exactly.
If Lee Johnson, the Sunderland manager, can't set us up to beat this Morecambe team, then there is serious issues questions need to be asked. Yeah. Sorry, because it is a winnable game, despite having a very good striker. It's not.
And if you flip it on its head, if you were looking at the other teams who are around us and you saw they had Morecambe, you'd be like, oh, well, that's 3 points for them. And then you'd say, if they drop any points, you're like, blimey.
Well, case in point, MK Dons beat them 4-0 last week, didn't they? They're a team near us on the table. So there you go.
So yeah, we've got to be like, so sorry, Morton fans, if there's any Morton fans listening. I'm sorry, don't mean to be like a, you know, an arrogant whatever. But like, yeah. We have to make sure we get the 3 points and do it comfortably, just to give people a bit of confidence as well, and a bit of
players' confidence as well. I think there's a bit of belief. You can notice the belief in some of the players isn't what it was earlier in the season. We need to get that back as well, as well as with the fans.
So we'll leave it there from the football perspective, I guess. And then when we come back, we'll have a little bit of a chat following on from the Red and White Army sports collective meeting that took place last week.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. As many people will be aware, the supporters collective meeting that took place last week, was it last the 30th of November, was it? It took place Tuesday, and it's an opportunity obviously for the Red and White Army, other sports collectives to attend, meet club officials and ask any sort of burning questions that there may be. Obviously there was a resurfacing recently of certain people involved in the club, as we know, as they are board members, but there was many sort of people, there was an understanding that they didn't have anything to do with the sort of day-to-day run of the club. And I think as a result of that, there's been a few further questions asked, even though there were some suspicions before that maybe what we thought the takeover was may not be. Now, that's not saying that is the case, and not trying to sort of be negative or sort of create conspiracies or anything like that. But obviously the big thing to come out of the meeting was when asked about the percentage shareholding within the club across the ownership group, how that stood. The question was, well, there was basically they refused to answer the question. on the basis that it was confidential. Now, since then, I know there's been a lot of discussion about, well, if there's an NDA in place, then, you know, they can't say anything. So why are people complaining? Well, there was no mention of an NDA in the meeting. It only came to light afterwards that there was an NDA in place. So I don't know why that wasn't, like, surely you just say, there's an NDA in place, we can't discuss that. You wouldn't, you kind of say that later. It's just, it just seems strange to me. But yeah, it's created a little bit of a, I don't know, a bit of concern in some quarters, maybe, that, you know, just, they did say, to be fair, that Kirill Louis-Dreyfus has the controlling stake in the football club. However, we don't know what that stake is, and how the other, how the percentage of the football club maybe that he has. I guess we don't know for sure if that means we're hamstrung at all. So yeah, but it's like more questions than answers, isn't it? I mean, I'm no expert on this thing. I mean, Chris would have done the pod if he could, but he can't. So I'm sure many people would be disappointed and delighted in equal measure, depending on where you stand. But I mean, as just like somebody who goes to the match and, you know, is kind of had the fingers burned a few times when it comes to backing ownerships, getting excited about potentially what we're going to do, whatever, based on whoever's taken over. I think now it's a case of, you know, you do proceed with a bit more caution. Yeah. I think we did get a bit of flack at the start of the season for being a little bit more cautious about the amazing transfer approach setup or whatever. And it's always like, if you ask a question or whatever, it's perceived to be negative, and it feels as though it's kind of rearing its head again. There seems to be a bit more of a analytical approach in terms of people maybe aren't thinking that so much as, you know, last time it was, you can't, how dare you say this, like the intention of these people are brilliant. You know, you're the devil if you disagree with these people. Whereas now I think people are a little bit more, which is good, I think. That's been a positive thing. Could be all fuss over nothing, but at the same time, it's good to see people maybe asking questions where they wouldn't have last time.
Yeah, and it's perfectly right to ask the question. And it can kind of get a little, the small amount of blowback that's been over the last week or so. So I see a lot of stuff about people saying, you know, why didn't you ask the question when they were top of the league? But the question was asked when Sunderland were top of the league. You know, it's always been there.
And we would have gone top of the league on Saturday if we
exactly.
joined top. So I don't think we would have stopped talking about it if we had.
When we had that great start and everything in the garden was rosy, it's still a question that needed to be posed. And you know, it's frustrating that the answer that came out was so kind of wrapped up in enigma, wrapped up in an old well-worn adage or something like that.
It just seemed like they're making it a lot harder. They seem to. It was just that statement and the way it came across and the whole approach to what is, let's be honest, like normal information. Like, we know the percentage shareholdings of most clubs in the country, because you can find that information out easily. It's not like we're asking for detailed information that fans should never have access to. As I see some people trying to imply that anyone asking for this is it's akin to us wanting to, you know the ins and outs of everyone's financial dealings, which, you know, and fans aren't qualified because we have to just trust owners, because that obviously works really well when people just blindly trust what owners say. But I think, like, the approach to it just seems to have made it into a bigger deal than it needs to be. We have every right as fans, especially at a supporters collective meeting, to ask the question. The fact it was the first question, or the main question, if you like, in the start of the meeting, it shows that it's not just a few conspiracy theorists. It's not like, you know, it's not Sunderland Info Wars or something who are asking for this. It's pretty sort of mainstream. If the Red and White Army are asking it, and it was such a, it's like they're not answering it, and there's no idea why they're not answering it. It's like, is It just doesn't strike confidence because it should be a fairly easy question to answer.
There's no reason why.
There's no reason not to answer it. Yeah, there's no reason. There's an issue.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason why.
In the same way that, if any walk of life, in any workplace or whatever, the only time somebody doesn't want to get asked a question is if they've made some kind of mistake or the answer isn't what the other person asking it wants to hear. And that might sound negative, but that's generally what happens. Let's be honest, if you know the answer to something and you know that the person asking the question is going to like it, you don't want to tell them. And that's what this comes across as. And like I said before, it's not like we're asking for we're not asking for Kirill Ilyaev's bank statements. Do you know what I mean? We're just asking for who owns the club. Spell it out in black and white.
I think we deserve that. I think on the other hand, the conversation's been they said he has a controlling stake, so why are you worried? That's been the counter argument.
But then I tell us what the stake is.
Exactly. I get that to an extent, but at the same time it's just odd that that's like pretty normal information that you'd share.
Yeah. If that stake ended up being 41%,
if he's willing to say he's got a controlling stake, just say what the stake is and then say what the other stakes are, and then we'll know. In fact, you wouldn't even need to say it was a controlling stake, because if you just told us the numbers, we could add them up ourselves and work out that it was a controlling stake. The fact that they're not doing that,
we'd get Chris to do it.
Obviously, we wouldn't do it. No,
I was literally asking Chris the other week to add something up.
Some nerd would Excel do it, and we'd all talk about it. Is basically what would happen.
I think that I don't think anyone's got it in for Kirill Louis-Dreyfus or anything like that. I don't. It's not that at all. I think it's being represented as that by some, though,
which I think is unhelpful to say.
I don't think it's fair. I think the question. I think it's just. It's not a question of even of the percentages to a point now. It's a question of we've got a board of shareholders who were here and preaching how important it is for a football club to be transparent, and they're the custodians of the club, and now saying this information's so precious that it's confidential.
Despite the fact we can Google 90% of other clubs in the country and find out their shareholders.
It's just hypocritical, isn't it? Really, when you think about it that way, and there could be good. I'm sure they've got good reasons for doing it. However, I don't like the kind of. It doesn't make you feel very.
If they're like this with this level of basic information, it does make you question things. And it's not about Kirill Ilyaev's, it's about the club. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's not about having it in for a specific person who owns it. It's like, is the club being transparent with us? Yes or no? It appears not. Therefore, we as fans of that club have a right to say, well, what's the issue then? Why are you not? And that's the end of it for me.
Considering how the club was bought by the last ownership group, there's been transactions within the club that resemble that Fasto sketch with Billy Bleach, when he's handing over the tens and twos and give me £5 and I'll give you 10, right? And then I'll give you 50 pence. No, you give me £20 and you end up having no money at all. And everyone's none the wiser as to how it all came about. I think in that circumstance, it's like we do need a little bit of sensitivity maybe from the new owners, because as we've said earlier today, we've been burned before, and it's
some people who are still around.
The
funny thing about this is we had this before the Donald Out thing happened in the December, and then you had people saying, oh well, it should have waited till January, it's going to affect January, and then Chris did that bit on the website, posing these sorts of questions, and then it was you should wait till after the meeting. You should have waited till after the meeting, and then the bit went out a day, and they've seen responses saying, "Oh well, it is an NDA in place. This is a pointless question to ask." It's like, why are people so desperate to simp for these people? It's like, at the end of the day, it's just bizarre, So sometimes it's okay to ask questions, and if there's nothing to hide, And like, it's not a case of going around with like tinfoil hats on and being like incredibly suspicious. And like, you know, Sunderland fans generally easily bought by nothing. I mean, you know, if you paint a roof and say you're going to fix a lift and, you know, replace some seats in the stadium, or get Sunderland Sports to replace some seats in the stadium, that'll give you like about 2 years grace in terms of questioning, because people are the good people who want good people at the club and want to buy into things and want to be part of it.
Well, that's,
at the moment, it just feels a little bit like we all want that.
Yeah, we all want that.
We don't want to get there by, you know, having, you know, the wool pulled over our eyes again because, you know, we've done some like minor DIY in the stadium. We want to be able to, you know, find out what these people are going to do so we can be really proud of what they achieve and be proud as a collective. And I think that's kind of the sad thing again. It's these kind of lines get drawn and it's like you've got the, you know, the dissenters and, you know, the people who should, and you know, the people who, you know, the fans, the supporter side, where it's like, you know, you just got to back them. You know, everyone wants to back the club. People don't go to the game. You know, it's, you know, very few people go to the game want to sit there and be miserable and unhappy and negative about everything. Like, it's not.
I want to spend 3 hours on a Saturday having a terrible time.
I want to spend like the vast majority
of all the
Saturdays of my adult life. I want to spend going somewhere and being miserable.
Like, I'm positive to a fault when it comes to Sunderland most of the time. But I mean, you can't just lie to yourself. You can't just bury your head in the sand and pretend that like this type of stuff is normal. Because when you combine this with what's happened under the previous ownership and the fact some of them are still there and the fact that it seems to be the same type of smoke and mirrors type stuff. And like, you can't just pretend it's not happening when it is. Healthily run clubs, especially in the climate at the minute with like the football fan review and the fact that more and more clubs are going into serious financial problems. Look at Reading, Derby, Bury. Like, all of those ownerships pulled the wool over their fans' eyes and told them things that weren't true, and no questions were asked. That's the common denominator. And it's becoming more and more normal for fans to be able to have a say. And not have a say in terms of decision making necessarily, but certainly to expect basic information to be provided when asked, because that's the way that this is going. The way that football is going is that way in terms of like I said with the fan review. And we shouldn't be, Sunderland fans, any Sunderland fan who feels like they want this information shouldn't be made to feel like they can't ask for it. We can't just be made to feel like we have to sit here and get what we're given. And if we don't like it, we're not the owners, so we can't be like, there's people going into bat for an ownership group who we don't know if they care about the club or about us as fans at all. So why would you defend them over your fellow fans who are trying to make sure that we all know the information? I just find it bizarre.
We do. Well, we know that a percentage of the club is owned by people who don't like the fans.
Yeah, exactly. So then and why we don't, are people but we going just to bat for them much over, we don't over know fans how, who want to know the truth is beyond me.
We don't know how much they own. And I think, you know, that and how much influence they have on a daily basis. And that's the worry. And you've still got them popping up here and there. We know that some of them still talk to people regarding, you know, club matters. You know,
people wonder why we're suspicious and we don't want to do
this. I think a real ludicrous thing is about it, and these two contrasting things, is the last sort of big row or campaign was surrounding, you know, becoming a supporters collective in order to get to a position where if the opportunity arose that, you know, so if the opportunity arose for, you know, fan representation on the board was there, you know, that there would be a setup there that would facilitate that and create that opportunity seamlessly. And now we're in a situation sort of a year later where it's like, oh, actually, it doesn't really matter, like, what percentage of football, who owns what. It's like, all right, well,
once we win the league,
then how does that work then? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a contrasting thing. So
it's basic information. Like, I know I've said this already, but I'm going to say it again. this is basic information that you can find out about clubs up and down the country just by Googling it. Why we can't be told that about our own football club doesn't make sense to me.
It's not about being negative or paranoid. It's just it raises some questions. And if the answers are so simple,
just tell us.
Provide
we don't want them to be simple. Fine. We don't want it to be bad. But burying your head in the sand and saying everything's great. I'm really good at supporting the club because I never question anything. That doesn't get anyone anywhere because that is why clubs get to where they are. Not just Sunderland, but other clubs who've had major issues with between board and fans. And it always divide and conquer, isn't it? Because if we don't all sing for the same hymn sheet, it's very easy to find the divides. And quite, you know, we just need to try and find out these answers while we can, because we can't have what's happened before happened again, especially not given the fact that this is now the fourth season, we're in the third tier. And as Chris Weatherspoon quite rightly has said on numerous cases, we can't survive in this tier as a football club. We need to get out of it. And one of the main ways that would help would be to have a united board who are transparent with the fans. It's irrelevant. It's not irrelevant, but the board should be transparent with the fans regardless of what goes on the pitch, whether we're top of the league or 15th or whatever, that doesn't matter.
But basically, we're suffering
success
now.
On the pitch and off the pitch go hand in hand. Yeah. And it's obvious that that's the case.
Well, it absolutely is the case here, because we're still sort of recovering from not getting promoted after the first year, because the hope was that they'd come in buy the club with our own money. Another thing that came out of it, and you can twist it however you want and get into the semantics of it ultimately. And this is why accountants make good money, and this is why people who have accountants don't pay much tax, is because they can manipulate it and move money around, and that's how it works. And this is what we're talking about here. It's like, oh, well, no, that money was always going to go to Ellis Short, so it doesn't matter really. It's like, well, no, it does matter, because they're asking for 37 million quid to buy when Donald was on about selling it, and he invited every supporter to contribute £1,000, so he got back what he paid for it. He did not pay that 20.5 million for the club. That went straight out of the club to him, to Ellis Short, or wherever it went, and that's still a void in those accounts. So, and you can't just write it off and then go, oh, but actually the club is worth
than most clubs have. Some clubs in this thing don't have a pot to piss in, never mind 20 million quid on to them. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely ridiculous.
But that does matter. That does matter. And things like that matter. And I think I understand that there's people who just want to, like, everyone generally just wants to go to the game and watch the match and come home and don't want to get involved in what appears to be some sort of crusade. And you don't have to be like that, but I think it's fine on a base level, personally, to say, well, it's interesting that you weren't willing to answer that question fully. And the fact that there appears to be some sort of confidentiality agreement in place, that's unusual. Why is that? And I think you can have a conversation further on from there, normal conversation. I don't think it has to be a case of you've been told, you've got your answer, you don't like it, so you need to shut up now
to say they've answered the question, but they've answered the question by saying they can't answer the question. I mean, technically they've answered it, but to use that as it's fine now. I mean, I've seen some people on Twitter say, well, they've answered the question, haven't they? So that's it. It's like, it's not because they've answered it by saying
you know what it is, though, and to be fair,
it's like politics.
To be fair to those people, I bet you it's just a perfectly natural response because I want to believe in something good.
Yeah.
And that's all it comes from. It doesn't come from a place of it doesn't come from a place of nastiness. It doesn't come from a place of, it doesn't come from a place where they're annoyed by, somebody else kind of campaigning for answers. I think it comes from a place that they just want something positive to happen. They want something good to happen. They want to believe in these people. And I think the thought may be that it isn't all what it seems. It's easier just to lash out, isn't it? And go, no. Mm-hmm. That can't be the case. Everything's great. Everything's fine. And it might be.
Yeah. But, and football should be fun. Football should be enjoyable and fun and a release from the everyday struggles and terribleness of daily life. Yeah. And maybe when we start talking about stuff in a serious manner, people might go, well, I'd rather not. I'd rather talk about Ross Stewart's Adam's apple or Callum Doyle's massive arse or something like that. You know,
you can just do both. You know,
part of the enjoyment comes from knowing that, well, it should come from knowing that your club's in a good place. And it's all part of the same part, isn't it? You know, it's all for every Leuven's on the wing, there's a Madrox owns.
Madrox in the boardroom.
Madrox in the boardroom, yeah. That's the pod title.
Yeah, that's too long. Too long. It is too long. But anyway, some people hated Leuven's on the wing anyway, to be fair. So
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, a lot of people did, rightfully so, yeah. Maybe more than Madrox. Don't know. Maybe, who knows? Anyway, we've gone on for ages there about that and rambled on and probably haven't offered any sort of level of expertise, but that's not what we're here for. There's other people who can sort of flesh out the bones a bit more. But as supporters, sometimes these are the conversations that people be having in the pubs who are suspicious or feeling a little bit annoyed about it.
I just want to say one thing. It's like, it's healthy to ask questions. Like it's not a conspiracy theory. Questioning things is normal. It's good. It's healthy because if there's nothing to hide, then answering those questions should be fine. And confidentiality agreements just don't scream confidence to me or to anyone in football.
Between confidentiality, not confidence.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, how can you have confidence when you can't have your questions answered? And I think it's important to do that. And not just with the board. It's healthy to ask questions of the manager. It's healthy to ask questions of the team. It's healthy to ask questions of anybody because transparency is key. And I think the enjoyment comes from knowing that you're supporting something real, and you can't know that you're supporting something real if your questions aren't answered, for me.
Absolutely.
Just leave it there then. Hopefully Stephen will be back next week. And obviously Tom and Matthew will be along on Thursday to look back at Morgan, preview the Plymouth game, which is another big one. So stay tuned through the week and there'll be more content from Wise Men Say. Thanks very much for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.